Blog Talk Radio.
What's singing?
I do too.
Sing it. Life is a song. What's singing?
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Change it.
Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. Welcome, welcome to another very exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is December the 27th, 2019. My, oh, my, oh, my. Well, as we can say, we've been able to see another year. We've been blessed by the Creator. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know the regular basis. You know the slogan for this show. If it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Now, many of you who join us on a regular basis, I don't have to repeat that number, but we'll give it to you anyway. You can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, you know that the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which brings you this show every week, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar installation and development companies, design companies. To address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and historically Black colleges and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young African Americans locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the effects and impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative. Now, as you can see, those who join us on a regular basis, that if you would care to advertise with us, we would more than welcome that. Now, we have a very, very, very exciting show for you today, and we're looking at the 2019 year in review. We're looking back at the year of 2019 and what it actually means to you as a person of African American descent living in the U.S. in terms of your tax dollars, how they're being utilized, what it's going for, and how those tax dollars impacts your community, whether they come back or not. So we're going to look at a major conference that was held here in Washington, D.C. The U.S. went to a meeting of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions, C2ES, which was held here in Washington, D.C., back on January the 23rd through the 24th, 2019. Now, this conference was very, very, very interesting because you had financial leaders from the private sector, our banks, talking about the large amounts of investment that their organization has done through green initiatives with their companies. And what comes to mind is the former CEO of Wells Fargo Bank. But the federal government leadership role in addressing climate change has greatly diminished from the announced withdrawal from the Paris Agreement to the example set by recent domestic actions to freeze vehicle standards and roll back the power sector targets. This is unfortunately and has real consequences, coinciding with several years of increased average global temperatures, recording floods, heat waves, droughts, and wildfires. The need for action is growing, increasingly urgent as the impacts are felt in urban, suburban, and rural America. The U.S. Conference of Mayors and the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions, CSES, formed an alliance for a sustainable future to provide a platform for the public and private sector to accelerate carbon reductions programs and sustainable development, as well as strengthen partnerships toward mutual sustainability and climate goals. This was a very, very, very important conference, ladies and gentlemen. The former CEO of Wells Fargo spoke, and I can't recall the gentleman's name at this time, and I'm not going to worry about it this morning because we've got a whole lot to cover in this exciting edition. But to kick off 2019, I thought this was a major, major, major conference with utmost importance, because we know that the administration that's presently sitting in the House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and I refer to him as 45, and he's subject to go off at any minute on Twitter. So we know that the safety is not on the weapon, which is 45. He doesn't keep the safety on his Twitter button. Now, when we began to look at the Department of Energy 2019 appropriations and renewable energy, the bill provides, this is what the bill provided for this fiscal year, 2019, in appropriations. Three of the 12 regular 2000 NY 2019 appropriation bills. This review focuses on the Department of Energy Appropriation Act for 2019. These were the highlights. Congressional appropriations for renewable, geothermal, solar, water, wind was $527.5 million, an increase of 1.5% over fiscal year 2018, 66% greater than the president's 2019 budget request, which was only $175 million. In general, the Congress gave a 14% increase to the Department of Energy's Efficiency and Renewable Energy EERE program for fiscal year 2009, totaling, are you ready for this? $2.379 billion compared to the actual, what was actually spent in 2018 of $2.04 billion for renewable for fiscal year 2018. Annual president's budget requests enacted. For solar, you had $241.6 million. Wind, $92.0 million. Water, $105.0 billion. For geothermal, it was $80.9 million, which totaled, you ready for this? $519 million in terms of fiscal year appropriations for fiscal year 2019. Now, when you look at the Department of Energy programs under Table 2, under the Appropriations Bill H.R. 5895, Public Law 115-244, which was passed on 9-21-18, Department Programs Energy Efficiency Programs, $2.379 billion. Cybersecurity, energy security, and emergency proposals, $120 million. Electric delivery, $156 million. Nuclear energy, $1.326 billion. Fossil fuel research and development, $740 million. Northeast Home Heating Oil Reserve, $10 million. Energy Information Administration. Now, this is really interesting to me. $125 million. Now, what kind of money that was spent for community engagement and to keep the American public aware about various programs locally and nationally, I didn't see a dime of that coming really in the form of community engagements targeted back to our community being spent with black-owned media, whether it be printed, electronic, or digital shows. I don't see it. I've asked sales representatives with Reach Media, with Radio One, which is Dr. Kathy Hughes' radio empire. And when I talk to the advertising director, they're not spending any money with them. So it's interesting to me how this much money gets spent. And the one major syndicated black radio stations, network Radio One, didn't receive any of this money. Or what they was received came from local spending, but from the Department of Energy, it wasn't there. Now, for science, 6.585 billion. Federal Regulatory Commission, 369.9 million. Advanced technology for vehicles, $5 million. Innovation technology loan guarantees, $33 million. Below is relevant parts of the public conference for H.R. 5895, which basically is describing the specifics of that bill. And I think it's very, very important to look at follow the money first. That's why when I looked at what was major, what was the topics that our community needed to hone on in and look at this and not look at it as in a vacuum, but look at it holistically on how it impacts our communities, the African-American communities and other communities of color locally and nationally. And this, as we say, is real telling. Now, it's been very, very interesting to me to note that when we began to look at the Solar Industry Trade Association, which represents the solar industry, is headed by Mrs. Abigail Harper, and is based here in Washington, D.C. The solar industry has an atrocious record for hiring African Americans. Now, this was a so-called national effort by the Solar Industry Trade Association and the HBCU Coalition, which they were supposed to join in a national effort to increase diversity in the solar industry workforce. This was a press release that was put out and released actually in September. Washington, D.C., and this was put out in September of 2018, ladies and gentlemen. Washington, D.C., with the goal of making solar workforce and solar communities more diverse, the Solar Industry Trade Association, SIA, and Historically Black Colleges and Universities Development Action Coalition have begun an effort to increase recruitment of African-American students into the industry. The solar industry, SIA, and the HBCU CDA have signed a memorandum of understanding to begin a comprehensive effort to help the solar industry recruit, employ more students from the nation's 101 historically black colleges and universities. This includes hosting a national jobs fair, individual jobs fairs at HBCU schools, and bringing solar companies to the campuses for recruitment. Diversity and inclusion is one of our highest priorities, and while we made progress, we still have a long way to go to make the solar industry more accurately reflect diversity of the communities we serve, said Abigail Harper, who has refused, ladies and gentlemen, after numerous invitations that I have provided to her to come on this platform to speak to the African American community about this actual issue. The president and CEO, those of us in the solar, joined this industry because we wanted to make the world better for all, which is why we are excited to partner with CDAC, tap into the talent of the HBCUs, and bring more of these students into our growing industry. as an outcome of the partnership, SIA and Kong will work with participating HBCUs to create a database of students pursuing clean energy degrees for those interested in working in solar that will be accessible to SIA companies. Both organizations will work with campus representatives to foster resume changes and coordinate interviews among participating companies. As a national community economic development intermediary offering programs that activities that target HBCUs and their host communities, are delighted to partner with SIA in the exposing HBCU students as their faculty and staff and opportunities for solar and clean energy, said Ron Butler, the CDAC CEO, with ultimate goals for community development and economic reference. We see diversity and inclusion is a growing industry as a, from all aspects, including workforce and enterprise development. The CDAC COO, Mr. Henry Gallott, committed that clean energy, both now and in the foreseeable future, is integral to our national economy and security. The CDA goal is to is ensure HBCUs are not only at the table, but adequately engaged. The new recruitment effort is one of SIA's many efforts to foster diversity, inclusion, and includes the best practice and guides for promoting diversity in solar workforce, as well as women empowerment initiatives, which provide networking, training, and other development opportunities. In November, SIA is hosting the latest summit in Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen, I do not like to be the bearer of bad news, but this is a farce. None of this has taken place. Now, the reason why I know, because I've contacted Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. I've contacted Coppin State. I've contacted Bowie State, Howard University, and a number of our HBCUs right here in the DMV market area about these programs. And I know that Morgan and Coppin is a part of this HBCU collaborative group. This has not happened. Now, as we move forward, yours truly has been working very, very hard to foster just these type of working relationships. We have no problem with it. But when I go to events that's put on by black organizations that are receiving funding and they come to our communities as though these things are happening, if they're not happening, I'm going to let people know. Now, I'm going to bring it home and make it plain as to why this issue and these issues are important. On January 24th, 2019, Mayor Muriel Bowser signed a historically clean energy bill here in Washington, D.C. This specific bill, signed by Bowser, it was called the D.C. Omnibus Amendment Act of 2018, codifying the district as the nation's premier leader in clean energy and climate action by setting a mandate for 100% renewable energy by year 2032. This historic piece of legislation bolstered Mayor Bowser's clean energy DC plan, which includes 57 action items for how the district will reach the Their ambitious target, additionally, the bill provides for road mapping to achieve the goals of the district. Mandating 100% of electricity to be sold in the district comes from that must come from renewable sources, doubling the required amount of solar energy deployment in the district, making significant improvements to bring energy efficiency for existing buildings in the district, providing energy bill assistance to support low and moderate income residents, requiring all public transportation and private-owned fleet vehicles to become emissions-free by year 2045, funding for the D.C. Green Bank to attract private investment in the clean energy projects. By signing the Clean Omnibus Act of 2018 into law, we solidify D.C.'s place as the nation's leader in the fight against climate change and proudly communicate to the world that we are still in Washington, D.C., said Mayor Bowser. If we are going to make progress in addressing climate change and global warming in our country, it's going to take cities and states leading the way. This groundbreaking clean energy law, we have created a model for jurisdictions across the country to follow. Ladies and gentlemen, I, in fact, yours truly, Ronald Bethay, testified at those hearings. I made it very, very clear that there should be specific things such as the commercial residential PACE program, the commercial PACE program, a public policies passed by Congress, which reflects that renewable energy upgrades are looked upon as the same way as public benefits such as water and sewer, and that there are tax benefits for this commercial and residential PACE program, where it's a person can borrow up to 30% of the assessed value of one's home or commercial property that's owned, not based on your credit score, which is always an issue in the black community. We also are aware of redlining, which also plays into this. We look at the fact that this would give African-American commercial property owners, as well as residential homeowners in the District of Columbia, an opportunity to get in the game. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? This Green Bank is being capitalized. I had the former head of the Public Service Commission, Miss Betty Ann Cain, to come on this show in 2017 to address this issue about the set fees which are being used to capitalize this Green Bank over the next 10 years at $256.6 million. It was actually $105.6 million more than they had originally requested. To me, it is a disgrace to the human race when you look at the Solar for All program, which was initiated because pressure was applied by the former Public Service Commissioner, Mrs. Betty Ann Cain, chair of the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C. And the Public Service Commission has the authority to regulate and look out for the consumers in Washington, D.C. for water, utilities, communications, and transportation. You got to go to the Public Service Commission. and everybody has to take their plan there, and that has to be looked at and analyzed by those public service commissioners who are supposed to be there to, as a safeguard, to protect the consumer. Now, as yours truly has testified numerous times during this fiscal year about this thing, one of the major problems, and we've just been joined by a caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, caller. Would you please share your name with our listening audience?
This is Frank Coles.
Mr. Coles. Well, Brother Coles, thank you for joining us this morning on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I think that your time is impeccable, because I'm just talking about the District of Columbia and the bill that Omnibus Act of 2018, which was signed into law of January of this year. This show is entitled 2019 Year in Review. So we're looking back over 2019 and looking at major public policies, major legislation that's been passed locally and nationally that spends our tax dollars and how it impacts on the Black community. Now, I know that the District of Columbia had a program called the Solar for All program, which this particular program had about seven grantees that participated, and an organization called Neighborhoods United DC, which has branches in the District of Columbia as well as Maryland, and they're in 12 other states now, but they originally started here in 2000, I think 6 or 7, by a Mrs. Anna Schulman. Now, this particular program, this Solar for All program, looked at the 80% area median income, and I beat the drum of time and time again, and I gave out the numbers on this, but this caller, Mr. Coles and his lovely wife, they participated in this program, and they were able to get a $30,000 solar PV system installed on their roofs. Now, it did not come out of pocket, but it wasn't free, because their homeowners and taxpayers in the District of Columbia, when they pay their water and gas bill, they're already paying for this. But Frank, could you sort of talk about the personal impact it's had on your finances in terms of how it's changed and taken to relieve some of the financial burden from you and your household?
Yes, it did. I was quite surprised at how much the electrical bill was reduced as a result of switching over to solar panels. It's been tremendous. I'm excited about it. My pocket is even more excited about it. It has allowed us to just live a very comfortable life and not pay a ton of money for electrical services. As you know, Pepco has gone up and up and up and up and continues to go up.
Frank, I was just talking about those compliance fees of $256.6 million that has, even though you've been able to get a break on your electric bill, this has been added to your gas as well as water bill in the district. So they don't get you on the front end, they get you on the back end. But at least you got some relief, because you acted when you had the opportunity. Now, I want our listening audience to be aware that Neighborhoods United did an excellent job providing outreach, engagement, and community information sessions in all 8 wards of the District of Columbia. And they were the only one that had this educational component. but they lost their funding because they weren't able to get enough people to sign up for a magnificent program that they had out here called the Solar for All program, which you and yours participated in, and because they weren't able to do this, they lost a $2 million grant because enough people simply didn't know about the program. But the city didn't budget any money for black-owned media. No major advertising dollars were put out there with the Washington Informer, with our black local papers, and with our black radio stations. And when you don't communicate to our communities through these platforms that we have, the Dr. Kathy Hughes of this world with Radio One, Reach Media, which is the same syndicator that has syndicated Tom Joyner, Reverend Al Sharpton's show in 76 markets across this country. When you can't talk about these type of programs and you can't come up with the advertising dollars to purchase airtime, even though the Department of Energy had a budget of $125 million for information. Now, how and where are these dollars and who got these dollars? Hell, I do not know, but I know we all contributed to the kitty. And this, to me, is a travesty that this program is still there, the Solar for All program, but Neighborhoods United is no longer a grantee for this program, and I think they had the most effective outreach component for that. What would you say about that comment, Frank?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think you're absolutely on point. I mean, they're very helpful and very successful in making this happen.
Yeah, now, that process took you almost a year, not because of anything that Neighborhoods United did or the installers did, but because of some of these bum-headed moves that 45 made with putting these damn tariffs on people, which slowed up the ability for the installers to get the frameworks that the panels were mounted on, your mounting and racking, and all of these things played havoc in their timelines because the actual process of getting that system on, what was it, a day and a half? It doesn't take that long if they had everything they needed. So the whole process has been affected by decisions made by 45's administration. Would you say that's a accurate assessment?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. The moment they had all of the materials to do the work, it took them about 48 hours to install it all.
Well, Frank, so. I really appreciate you taking time from your from being able to chill this morning to call into this platform to talk to the African-American community, because our people need to understand when black folks in Washington, D.C. catch a common cold, we got triple pneumonia where the sun don't shine everywhere else because there are programs that are available here because this is a deregulated market. The PJM market area, which means Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Maryland, which is composed of about 12 states, make up this region, and this is a deregulated market. And because it's a deregulated market, that means you can have competition in the marketplace, and solar and wind can flourish. And because of the aggressive renewable portfolio standard legislation that Mayor Bowser saw, so they have something called energy credits. They're known as SDRACs. And you can actually monitor that, how much energy the system that's on your roof generates and what's not being used by your household, then you can either get a credit or you can get a check. So I hope that you it's been able to cover all of your expenditures in terms of what your outlay was. Could you give an example to our listening audience of what your bills used to be and what your average cost of a utility bill is now?
significantly different. Before we had the solar panels installed, I was paying Pepco right around, they were billing right around $400 to $500 a month. Since I've had the installation of the solar panels, our bills have dropped significantly, well below $100 a month.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not making this up. You're getting this, as we say, you're getting it from the horse's mouth. You get it from a person who acted when it was time to act. And I cannot hold it against our community, because when those decision makers, the Tommy Wells of this world, who I've met with personally and asked him to come up with some advertising dollars for me to be able to buy airtime with WOL, you met with a thought that I asked for a personal favor. This was not a personal favor. This was a issue of getting the information out about this Solar for All program. And I think it's a travesty that organizations like Neighborhoods United were denied grants for 2020, funding for 2020, because they couldn't get enough people to sign up for the program that they had out there, because people simply didn't know about it. That's the bottom line. And this is always the case. This is why I'm doing this year in review from retrospect. So, Frank, I want to thank you for taking time from your schedule to call in today. Do you have anything you like to close and say to our listening audience?
None other than the fact that, solar is just it's magnificent. You know, free is good. Cost is okay. But when you can provide, when you can have a service that you don't pay an arm and a leg for, and provides good, clean, efficiency, energy, and electricity, you know, I'm all for it. So, you know, I commend those folks that purchased, that have acquired solar panels and any other sources of recyclable or reusable, energy sources or water sources that we can utilize that lowers the cost for the typical citizen and more like myself, a senior citizen. That costs less money to operate, or doesn't cost a fortune to operate. So.
Well, Frank, I want to take once again thank you, man, for coming on and sharing this valuable information with our listening audience, because this is a major issue in the black community. Because when we begin to look at the escalating cost of real estate, and specifically the District of Columbia, and how the prices on homes has gone up, a lot of our millennials, they can't afford to buy homes with the salaries that they make. So a lot of them have moved back in with their parents. And when they move back in, they not only do they move back in, they bring their children too. So this puts a added strain on senior citizens in terms of them being able to pay these utility bills. And I know that what that disease is, it's called grown and ain't gone. So if you're in the black community, 99.9% of you probably will have some of the same ailments called your children are grown, but they ain't gone, if it's in the District of Columbia, brother. So I'm going to close on that note. And once again, Frank, thank you for calling in.
My pleasure, my brother. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good day.
Okay. Take care.
All right.
Uh-huh. That was Mr. Frank Coles here that just joined us. And I put a call in and asked him to come on because I want to put a realistic spin on what this legislation and how it impacts people, because we have now these compliance fees on gas, water, and electric. Over and above that, during the hearing, the in the Public Service Commission, they have a division which is supposed, a legal arm, which is their issue, is to look out for the ratepayers in the District of Columbia. Now, when we look at all of these millions of dollars that I spoke about for fiscal year 2019 that Congress appropriated, where and who do you think this money went to? It went to utility companies. It went to tech companies. All of those stakeholders who earn their monies from the energy industry. And we understand that there's competition in everything because that is the capitalistic model. It's based, supposed to be based on competition, the more competition that you have in the marketplace. But we as ratepayers and consumers, we're getting hit from all ends. So that is realistic. So it's very, very interesting to me that in January, as we talked about, where and how you are paying for your utility bills. One of the things that we looked at was the issue of how much does this stuff energy cost? And there was a very, very interesting article that appeared in January that basically looked just at that, which was able to give you a very, very, very clear breakdown on electricity rates in your state in 2019. Now, this was an article that appeared on January 8th, 2019, where it gives you electric rates in your state. And you'll be able to get this information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Go over to our news and events link, click on that link, look over to the immediate right, and you'll see our archives. When you go to the archives, click on January 2019, scroll down, and it'll get a, here's we've compiled data to show you just how much energy costs can vary, including historical electric power prices from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA, in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Information on certain rates fluctuations may help you understand your bills or decide to change your energy plan. Familiar with energy choice and what to sign up for a new plan? Your zip code above your state can ensure that. Now, what was very interesting in this, where you live affects your electricity rates. In October data of 2018, they collected data available showing the average U.S. price was 12.87 cents a kilowatt hour. It rose 0.5% from the previous year. If you live in Louisiana, you paid the lowest average residential electricity rates in any state in the country, which was 9.11 cents per kilowatt hour. The lowest rates is in Arkansas, where residents pay an average of 3.4 cents per kilowatt hour. Below are the cheapest states to live in based on residential electricity rates. Louisiana, 9.11. Arkansas was rate number 2, 9.34. Washington State was number 3, 9.68. Utah was ranked number 4 at 10.32. Idaho at 10.33, Tennessee at 10.70, Missouri at 10.71, Kentucky at 10.77, North Dakota at 10.83, Georgia was number 10 at 10.96. Now, as we begin to look at costs, we need to look at how regulation and deregulation plays into affecting that retail cost. Also, once again, Hawaii residents paid the highest electricity rates in the country. Below are the 10 most expensive states to live in based on residential electricity rates. Hawaii, 32.46. Alaska at 22.51. Connecticut, 21.87. Rhode Island, 21.46. Massachusetts at 21.30. New Hampshire at 20.23. New York at 19.29. Vermont at 18.42. Maine at 16.47. California was ranked number 10 at 15.73. Looking for residential electric rates, you'll be able to scroll down there and you'll actually be able to click on a link that will give you the average home in the U.S. consumes 897 kilowatt hours in electricity per month. State and region. When you click on that link, it will open up to another link called Choose Energy. Choose Energy Service Area, put your zip code in there, and it will show you how much energy your home and what you used that year annually. I think this was an excellent piece that was put together, and it's out here. It's called Choose Energy. But you can get all that information where? At the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. That's the www.positivechangepc.com. Click on our news and event section. Now, these were some of the things that I looked through when, in preparing this show, that I thought were very, very, very important for us to look at in the scheme of things here on this platform today. Now, as we move on over to look at what was very impactful during February when we began to look at our colleges and universities, and we always like to bring things back to home here, I found it was a very, very interesting article that talked about the trees or the solar environment is the question. Georgetown University Solar Farm, which was a very, very, very interesting read. I think you'll find that very, very interesting. You'll be able to find that under our February archives link, and it'll go into Georgetown University is planning to build and buy energy from a solar farm in Charles County, Maryland, under an arrangement with Oregon's Energy. Georgetown University has a bold plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions by later this year. It will get nearly half of its electricity from solar power, However, building the new solar farm in Childs County, Maryland, the power of the universe will require cutting down 210 acres of forest land. I'm very much in favor of solar, someone said, but people had it in a problem with the actually cutting down the trees. The pros off-site solar project will reduce greenhouse emissions equivalent to planting more than 429,000 trees. The amount of carbon sequestered by is about 30,000 cars, said the university spokesperson in a statement declining an interview. And this was a very, very well done article, which was done by Jacobs Feststone, and it was published with the WAMU in February of 2019. And as we've said, ladies and gentlemen, we are attempting to sort of move through the calendar year and look at what we felt were major. This is a major piece, ladies and gentlemen, because believe me, when you see the Catholic Church moving on things, it's major. I don't have to tell you the kind of wealth that the Catholic Church has in this country. Also in Washington, D.C., the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. has built the largest solar array in Northeast Washington, D.C., right on the Maryland line off of Eastern Avenue. It's 14 acres. It's a 2.3 megawatt farm. And they were very, very upfront about it in terms of their purpose was to raise money to offset their costs for running their nursing and senior homes facilities. And they needed the revenue. So this is something that can be replicated by our black churches as well as our colleges and universities. But unfortunately, out of the 101 HBCUs since 2011, I can only speak for University of Maryland Eastern Shore. The former provost, Dr. Thompson, there built a 17-acre farm in 2011. Since that time, the University of Virgin Islands have built a solar farm. I understand that Prairie View has built a solar farm, and I know that Bowie State has built a 7-acre farm, including rooftops on their parking lot facility. And these are the only four HBCUs that have any kind of significant solar farms, and I wouldn't call these being significant, because when you begin to look at the number two fixed cost at any university after salaries from the president down to the maintenance crew, the number two fixed cost is energy to keep the doors open at that university, and which the rise of the cost of tuition has to be calculated in the rise in cost of energy for what? To keep the lights on and the heat on. You cannot, that's a no-no. And we know what happened here in Washington, D.C. last year when someone turned off the boilers during this time of year while the students were out, and we had a cold snap because it was the weather was just about like it is right now, unseasonably warm. That's there we are again with global warming, but we had a hard freeze to hit the Washington metropolitan, Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area. And when it shot down in the teens and it stayed that way for almost a week and a half, ladies and gentlemen, if your stuff wasn't correct, I don't care from car to boiler to what, you had a problem. You had to call who? You had to call the plumbers and the boiler folk who can keep that heat going. Because you certainly ain't going to get no rent from somebody and they ain't got no heat in their apartments or whatever. So I know some personal friends of mine who are in that area of work, and they were on call 24/7 running around trying to make sure that apartment complexes and these boiler systems were able to meet the capacity. Because as that temperature drops, that thermostat goes up in these homes and in these buildings. Because you got to turn it up in order to make it comfortable enough for people to go to work and go on with their daily lives and routines. And this is what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Energy affects everything, and I tell people everything starts with energy, everything ends with energy. It's one of the major reasons why the home continent cannot do what? Move into manufacturing and production because they don't have the grid infrastructure. And that's a whole nother topic that we could go into. Now, as we began to look at this situation with Georgetown, then Puerto Rico has looked at in February of last year, interesting article. It talks about Puerto Rico becoming one of the major players in battery storage. And you'll find that article under our February section, under our news and events tab. It's entitled Puerto Rico Proposes Largest Solar Storage build out in the U.S. with a 20-year draft plan. And we know what happened when the storms hit Puerto Rico and they wanted to get off and go to microgrids on Puerto Rico because they're much more effective in those tropics in order when these storms hit for them to be able to get these microgrids back up and running after you have these devastating hurricanes. So it's real, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we're going to take a pause for the calls here and Solar Now in the future with its economic impact. I see that we're going to have to carry this end of the year review over because we're just on February, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't even scratched the surface on some of the important and exciting information that we were able to bring to you, our listening audience, over this platform in 219 to you here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we'll be right back.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you are listening to us broadcasting over Blog Talk Radio, streaming over Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn right outside of your nation's capital from beautiful Tacoma Park, Maryland. Ladies and gentlemen, 2019 was very, very interesting when we began to look at the cannabis industry, because we look at, well, people say, well, what does it have to do with energy? It has a hell of a lot to do with energy when you begin to look at what happens when you're trying to grow cannabis and the amount of energy that it takes to, and the growers are spending in controlled environments where they have to grow inside in order to meet the quality controls that are placed on this industry. But in 2018, 45 signed the 2018 Farm Bill legalizing hemp. Now, hemp and cannabis are different. Hemp, this article appeared in Cannabis Business Times, and it talked about this opportunity. 45 signed the 2018 Farm Bill on Thursday, signaling the official nationwide legalization of the industrial hemp, a moment long awaited by the cannabis industry. Early this year, Senator Mitch McConnell, oh my goodness, the Grim Reaper, inserted the language into the Hemp Farming Bill Act of 2018 to federally legalize the cultivation and sale of industrial hemp, which is defined as cannabis that contains less than 0.3% THC. Congress passed the $867 billion agriculture bill. Let me repeat that. The agriculture bill for 2000, appropriations bill for Department of Agriculture was $867 billion. In December 12th, effectively removing hemp from the list of controlled substances and allowing states to regulate the production, commerce, research, and approval from the USDA. The bill is a 807-page document. Hemp is discussed only as few times through the document. However, the impact on industry is epic, said Dr. Janelle Kim, co-founder and lead formulator for the JBK Wellness Labs. Unfortunately, the Farm Bill will end an era of hemp prohibition that would be deemed that the hemp is an agriculture commodity and remove it from controlled substances. Business can be great as a change agent. Now, this is one side of this thing. The other side of this is that in many states, African Americans are not being, or whether it be on the hemp or cannabis side, receiving no licenses for dispensaries, to be growers, nothing. And I'm saying on this platform, we talk about this issue because these are some of the proposed projects and initiatives that the Positive Change has looked into on how we could build large-scale solar farms in some of these market areas and on African-American-owned lands, whether it be farmland or private family-owned lands, to build hemp and cannabis extraction facilities. So this can be processed into CBD oil, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. This is the economic impact that this bill gives that, but if we don't have this discussion around this bill and how it impacts upon our community and the lack of licensing and opportunities that are being given in these a lot of these states to African Americans. And once again, if you don't know that this is out here, how are you going to take advantage of something, even though you may have a family, may have the wherewithal and the property to move? But nobody else is talking about this, ladies and gentlemen, to our community. And I have an issue with that. But as we move on and we begin to look at things that really matter, this is one of the things that really, really matter when we begin to look at the industry. So as we move through our show today, we want to let people know who brings you this program, because we have to take a pause for the cause to do that. Now, if you haven't been sleeping under a rock, you know that this show is sponsored by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation and design companies. To address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, also to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to build capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young African Americans locally and nationally, to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on black America. Also is brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you can get more information about that by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. And you always remember, the slogan for this show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. So, ladies and gentlemen, please, please do yourself a favor and join us by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com, clicking on our news and events tab, and you'll go into our blog section, and you will find that we have put together one of the most, I say, dynamic sources of content and information on the renewable energy industry and how it will impact on everybody, but disproportionately it impacts our community more than anyone else. And that proves itself in terms of later on our show this morning, we will hit upon that area. Now, I see we're going to have to do a second part of this year in review, because I'm in a 90-minute show today, and we've already done an hour and 14 minutes, and we're just getting to March. And I think that this information will need to carry on over the next week, and we intend to do that. So what we're going to do here, we're going to look at what were some of the topics and the selection of the topics that hit and impacted our communities in May, March of 2019? And in March of 2019, there was a very, very interesting piece that talked about San Francisco has the most solar jobs in the nation. It also, some of the other things that I felt to be very, very important, setting the right course for climate change in Annapolis. This was a piece by Mike Tidewell, who's executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. They're one of the major organizers for the Energy Summit Rebuild Maryland that was just held at the University of Maryland, and yours truly had a young lady representative from that group to come on this platform and talk about that. And we actually attended that event, and we did come back and provide information to our listening audience concerning some of the major issues around that. And I think you'll find out that the Clean Energy Act, which was before the Maryland State Senate and House, mandated a 50% for states' energy to come from renewable energy by 2032, and it had a 14% carve-out for solar, which is very aggressive. Now, under their renewable portfolio standard legislation, unfortunately, renewable portfolio standard legislation for our listening audience, it just means this much energy must come from renewable sources, must be generated from wind, solar, hydrogenetics, and even they have nuclear energy as a clean source of energy. So we want to make it plain on this show and keep things moving in the right direction here and bringing you information that we figured that you can use. Now, one of the major things that I found was in articles that I spent some time on was PACE programs near you that can create financing wealth opportunities for our historically black colleges and universities, African-American solar development and installation companies, commercial property, and private farmland owners. And I published this, was published on March 15, 2019. And when you began to look at, is the utility scale solar industry a finance bubble, which I found was a very, very interesting article about the billions of dollars that are coming into the, from the private sector coming into the renewable energy industry. PACE programs offering long-term private financing for renewable energy and energy efficiency upgrades to homes and businesses. PACE is an enabling legislation is active in 36 states, D.C., and PACE programs are now actively launched and in operation in 20 states plus the District of Columbia. Residential PACE is currently offered in California, Florida, Missouri, which is only 3 states. And this is what I have a serious problem with in the District of Columbia, because if you want to put $256 million on ratepayers' gas, water, and electric bills in the District of Columbia, when that Omnibus Act went into place, it should have specified that an African-American-owned bank should have been the PACE bank for that money to flow through in the District of Columbia. But our banks had to move on it. And yours truly publicly contacted the National Association of Black Bankers, and I never got any kind of response whatsoever. So we gonna make it plain that how we are. This the gentleman said yesterday on Carl Nelson's show, addicted to white, to think that folks who don't look like us gonna look out for our benefit when they trying to serve their own. That's not gonna happen, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I am bringing you this information using commercial and residential property assessed clean energy is a national organizing tool to increase market share for African American solar owned development and solar installation companies working with the African American Mayor's Association. Now, this was an article that I put sort of wrote and put together. It was an outline of strategies of how we needed to be moved forward. And I think we did an excellent job in captioning this information, and you'll be able to find all this information at our website by logging on to positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. Now, we also were able in March to have a very, very interesting interview with a young man out of Atlanta, Georgia, by the name of Mr. Terry Travis. Now, Mr. Travis has an organization where he, in fact, has started a group where they're trying to go to our historically black colleges and educate our community. It's called EDNOIRE. It's a mobility consulting group that works with utility companies, nonprofit, government agencies, public health groups, regional and national EV organization developers, as well as automakers of all facets of e-mobility. We have proven track records in creating innovative programs and initiatives to address the need of our partners. In addition, we approach our work from a social justice lens and provide creative solutions as well as equitable outcomes. EV are also founded. EV Hybrid NAR is a nonprofit that is a national largest network of diverse electric vehicle drivers and enthusiastic. In other words, it's an EV organization for black folks to join if you own an electric vehicle. Long and short, which is needed, because we need to get our people educated on these electric vehicles. There is promotions that are out here. I just talked about a $5,000 promotion that was put out by Nissan. We've discussed that several times during the year about people being able to take advantage of this with the Nissan Leaf. And with the federal $7,500 federal tax credit, you would be able to, if you live in those specific jurisdictions, and we have that information right here at our reach, which we are reaching for that information right now to be able to make it what? Plain to our listening audience. And I am still here presently reaching out, trying to identify what did I do with that information here inside of my office. But to make a long story short, Nissan has this program, and it is up and running as we speak. And we would hope that our community would be able to take advantage of this, and they now can, because I have that information in my hand. So this is a promotional starting cost of that Nissan Leaf is $29,990. We're talking $30,000. Up to $5,000 on special Nissan Leaf rebate. Now, more range, more power, more confidence. And they have addressed that. Now, this offer expires on January the 2nd, 2020. So it's right around the corner, ladies and gentlemen. Eligible requirements and other restrictions apply. Proof of eligibility is required. Okay, and you're talking the $5,000 Nissan rebate off of the MSRP for 2019 Leaf and $2,500 a Nissan rebate off the MRSP for 2019 Plus are available for employees of Baltimore Gas and Electric, Del Mar, Pepco, Potomac Edison, and SMECO, who reside in the following states: Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Must present the participation dealer afforded a copy of the flyer, proof of employment, and a copy of your current utility bill, one of the aforementioned utility companies. And this information we put out here over this platform numerous times since we've gathered had this information, because we can't and won't abuse it, because we may not be in a financial position to use it, because it does have requirements without any question about that. So as we move on with trying to bring you some news that you can definitely use, As I was speaking about the organization that this young gentleman had put together, Mr. Terry Travis. They had back in April an HBCU tour that started with Clark in Atlanta campuses, Morehouse and Spelman in Atlanta, and they were going to move around to do some homecoming. So I'm quite sure they were able to get that done in 2019, ladies and gentlemen. But you heard it first here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, as I've indicated to you, we have just scratched the surface, and we've done 90 minutes already. So until next week, we truly hope that this synopsis in 2019 year in review of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America has sort of taken you back, and we'll kind of next week try to keep this thing moving forward as we talk about some of the things that did in fact take place in this year, 2019. And until next year and next week, this is yours truly, Ronald Buffet, saying to you, always remember that the slogan for this show is, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captured that power for your financial benefit. And we hope that we definitely brought you news that you could definitely use on this episode of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Here's a song worth singing.
I can too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Singing.